Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. Today, we have the honor and privilege of speaking with a good friend of mine, Mr. Sergio Rios, who's here to talk about his band, Orgone, and their upcoming releases. Please help me welcome from North Hollywood, Mr. Sergio Rios.
Hello, Sergio. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you, man?
I'm doing all right, man. Hanging in. Yeah, man. So glad you were able to take some time. I know you've got a lot going on, I'm sure, but glad you were able to take the time to chat with us on the new podcast, Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music. It's been fun. You're actually the tenth interview that we've done to cap season 1, and. Yeah, I mean, we've just been really cool talking with some people that I've worked with and that I've known, some people that I have not worked with but heard really great things about. And
what's on your first interview with Mike Clark or something like that, or the second one?
The second one we did a 2-part with Mike Clark, so he got to talk about Axel Proof and working with Herbie and being a Buddhist. There's a bunch of stuff. I mean, it's awesome. Really good. I mean, he's a nice guy. I started talking with him. When I released my vinyl in 2017, and we covered God Made Me Funky by the Headhunters. And he had just really nice stuff to say, and it was really down to earth and really cool. And then when they start talking about it and you kind of unravel this onion in anyone's life, you just realize, like, how much story is really there and how people they work with what they've done.
Oh, man, that's rad. Yeah, I can't imagine. I'm sure I can't wait to hear it.
And you're right in that same boat. I mean, definitely no small feat to have done what you guys have done with Orgone. Not only from a musical aspect of, you know, being a musician, but being a band leader, touring, having multiple albums, like the ups and downs of all of that over the last 20 years. And even a testament to be around after 20 years is kind of like crazy. I mean, so many people that I went to school with at Berkeley, like, some of them didn't, you know, as soon as they got out of college, didn't even try to do anything musically. And then, you know, 20 years later, there's not that many that are still doing it. So I read an article about the last album. I know you guys have some new music coming out that some of it's already out, a new single that we'll get to. But I wanted to kind of talk about your last album, Reasons. It said that after 2.5 years you guys were touring on the road, you needed to shed away from the rest of the world. And so you retreated on the 10th studio album out to Joshua Tree in a ranch house recording studio. And you recorded a lot of the basics for that album in 1 week. And then, a lot of it through late night tune improvisation. And so I just kind of wanted to understand, like, based on your other albums, or if this was different, is this your normal process to tour, finish touring, and then kind of retreat and decide to record, or what's next for the band?
Well, with that particular album, we didn't actually record the tracks, but we wrote a lot of the foundation for a lot of the tracks on the album in that retreat. You know, I think we needed to sort of just kind of powwow together, and that was somewhat of a new thing in the career of Orgone, as far as getting together as a band, the touring band, to sort of just see what, throw stuff up and see what we can start carving out, you know, sort of in one stir of energy, if that makes any sense. Most of what we've done has been sort of just kind of developed in the studio. You know, we have my recording spot, and that's where we've done a lot of our so what we did was we did a lot of the writing in Joshua Tree, and then over the next couple months we kind of finished developing and tracked it over at Killian Sound. We started as a instrumental band, so we do tend to have a lot of the gestation but the seed of material a lot of times will come from the rhythm section, and we'll start writing from in that way because kind of the primary guys are in the rhythm section, and that's sort of where we're coming from, just the sound of the music and groove of just that, the machinery and the interlocking of the way how these rhythm parts feel. So that was a little bit different to sort of step away and really focus on that, and it was great. It was really good organic interaction with everybody in the band and writing with Adrian in the room and just developing some of the cuts in that manner. You know, and we've been touring so consistently for many years now that it was it became crucial to sort of have to carve out that time, because once we're off the road, it starts becoming a little more difficult with everybody kind of spread out to keep that going on the regular. So it's almost like you have to sort of stop everything and say, let's go and do this.
Do you feel like it's one thing to be with them and touring for a number of years, but when you're with them in the recording studio, you're with the same group, but in a different way?
Oh yeah, for sure. Well, the dynamic, I mean, we have our interpersonal dynamics, which is great, you know, and we get along wonderfully, and you know, it's funny, and you know, it's a family. Yeah, touring is very different. You have to also be kind of insular to an extent, and just to keep your sanity, you know, when you're touring heavily, when you're in a van for 8 hours every day together. You know, with so much kind of hurry up and wait downtime, and just the usual routine when it comes to touring. So having that sort of freedom of time to be creative, the creative aspect doesn't necessarily cultivate so much when you're grinding out on the road. You kind of have to reserve as much for yourself in terms of just sanity, and you know, we only have so much energy, and most of it is going into our shows and performing, you know.
No, yeah, that definitely makes sense. It's like you're wearing different hats, but not at the same time. So we have the recording hat.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, when the road gets tiring, so it's harder to find time to be creative and have ideas, and you know, it's nice to have days on end to sort of talk about it and work on it a little bit and step away and work on it some more, and you know, have late nights and just do it for the sake of fun and creating, and kind of take the pressure off of it having to do anything in particular other than, hey, let's do that and let's make some music, you know.
So then when you look at like your catalog, and you guys have done, I believe, 10 albums, and so as that being the 10th, when you're going to start writing for that and prepare a recording for that, are you thinking differently about it? Not just because you fast forwarded into the future, I guess, you know, compared to the previous albums, but are you thinking about the last album when you go into the next one, thinking like, we're going to do something completely different, or does that even come up at all?
That's a good question. And I don't think there was that much forethought into that. If it's going to be anything different or anything, it was just, you know, you go in phases, you kind of get into this, and hey, let's do this for a bit. And I mean, there's always a thought to look forward and try to develop or you know, or just at least keep trying to write better songs or something a little different. I don't know. It's hard to think about it too much, because then you can tend to overthink it and not get anything done and not move forward and just sort of throw your hands up. So I think we definitely went in, approached that to just get a bunch of new material. I don't know if it was necessarily, let's go make a record that sounds like such and such or anything. And as that developed, it kind of has its own identity, sort of really came to the forefront. You know, it definitely, I think just our collective mindset was in a very much in a more sort of disco funk, late 70s, early 80s kind of vibe for a lot of the stuff. You know, that's just, I think it's just the phases, like anything. You get in the mood and that's where it goes. And when you look at it after the fact, you kind of sort of observe it and realize, oh, this has this kind of a thing to it where it wasn't necessarily planned. At least that's the way it feels. You know, I don't like to. Definitely, I'm a proponent of not thinking too hard before going into things, and sort of let the moment create what it wants to be. So, yes and no, I guess, to answer your question a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, yes, there's some thought involved in that, but generally, it's nothing guiding. And I personally try to avoid stuff like that, because then I'll get flustered and won't allow myself to kind of just to have the freedom to not expect anything out of it other than what it creates itself to be.
That makes sense. I mean, even thinking about your origins as a band, it says in your bio that you guys worked together from the early 90s, but didn't actually fully form until or going into the end of the 90s. So that sounds like a very organic type of process of just like letting things fall into place as they fall into place.
Yeah, it's kind of figure it out as you go. We've been very lucky just in the dynamics that the interpersonal and our musical dynamics, the way we play together, and just those kind of relationships and connections that have been forged. You know, we hold those dear, and it's just kind of always developed that way.
Nice to see how things kind of develop like that. I mean, you guys have had so many different players in and out of that, but basically you and Dan have kind of been like kind of the glue of that group. Would you say that and kind of like forming that partnership?
Well, yeah, pretty much. I've known Dan Hasty for 20-something years, 20, since we were teenagers. So there's that brotherhood for sure. And it's definitely just it's our baby. You know, we started the band with the two original members and our bass player, Tim Glum, and a drummer, Sean Shea, who have been dear friends and involved in some way or another throughout most of the years. You know, once it started developing and things in people's lives pulled them in different directions and all that, you know, we've just kind of held on and kept the ship steering forward and just sort of held steadfast to just believing in this thing that we just want, that we just love. You know, this idea of this band and something that encompasses so much of what has influenced us and new things that come in this vehicle for creating music that we can be proud of and want to share and that has some sense of fulfillment as far as artistically or just in for our being to want to just bring this into the world, I guess. You know, like anyone, like everyone, any artist just want to create. So it's been great to have a partner, you know, and that goes for everyone who's been involved in Orgone and the Orgone organization for over the last 20 years. I think we're pretty much on our 20th year anniversary this year because I think the name actually was official and around the year 2000.
Wow, that's a milestone.
I think I'm realizing that as we speak.
It's always great to kind of see, like, to look back in hindsight and see how far you've come and what you've done and having a body of work and all the people you've played with and all the, you know, hundreds of shows you've played everywhere. And it's just, you know, when you start something, you don't necessarily think of it where it's going to go. You just kind of see where it takes you.
Yeah, absolutely. And exactly. You know, just work hard and hope for the best and try not to make too many missteps. We're lucky that it's still going and there, you know, we have fans and there are people who care about what we do and we care about them. And so we care about what we do and what we bring. So, feel pretty lucky to kind of have sort of held this dream and carried it and kept it going and, you know, and still believing it just as much as we believed in it 20 years ago.
Awesome. That's great. That's great to never let that fire go out. Just continue to keep adding on to it over the years. So then when we talk about more of your process, so I know that you guys write a lot of your own material, but I've heard some really great covers from you, you know, starting with Funky Nassau. You did Do Your Thing by Isaac Hayes. And I really enjoy Fanny on I Get Lifted, which is Casey and the Sunshine Band via...
Yeah. The George McRae,
yeah.
Yeah.
And so, I just kind of wanted to understand, like, how the use of covers, like, are you guys picking covers to kind of get fans to be fans of you and then kind of push them into your originals? Are you thinking of it that way? Or are you just like, we really love these songs, we want to do our own stamp or version?
Yeah, it was a little bit of, you know, when, like most bands, when you start, you're learning songs and picking some covers to do. And it was always choice covers. Dan, he's a great DJ. And you know, and everyone in the band's always digging their, everybody's got their own catalog of music that they love, you know. As far as, yeah, I think originally the idea of doing covers was something maybe a lesser known or not prominent in the era. Now it seems kind of different. I guess let me rephrase that. The initial idea is you want to play these songs that if people have never heard, it's like, check out this song, it's rad. And then as far as recording them, then it was cool. What's the reason for that? Let's put a spin on it somehow. Or it's something that the kind of it fits the identity of the band, and it's just like Do Your Thing was just part of our live set in that era when we recorded that, and we didn't really have the intention of putting that version out. And Ubiquity Records, our label at the time, which was a great label in the late 90s, early aughts, but they were all through the 90s, really. And especially in the early aughts, it was just putting out great material. And they definitely, a lot of Ubiquity compilations were a big part of our influences and things, a lot of breakbeat records and stuff like that. They heard the version we had and were pretty adamant about putting it out. And I'm glad they did, because it's definitely spoken to a lot of fans. And, were it up to us, I'm not sure that I would have necessarily wanted to put it out, but Fanny sounds awesome on it, and it was a great arrangement and performance. So it was really, the version we did was, it's an Isaac Hayes song, but we did mainly, our version is based mostly off of the Lynn Collins cover version, with Lynn Collins and the JB's version that she put out.
I love that version.
Yeah, and, I don't think there was the same thing. I think it's more about just sharing your love of these songs, and hopefully it's something that we bring some identity to the table with, just that they're not reinventing anything, but just honoring it. We want to do it with a high level of reverence, no matter what. I think that's really as far as the feeling with recording covers, that, we want to, bring in some reverence, bring in some, you want to lift it up, and at best, yeah, people discover it. And if they've never heard the original, they'll go seek it out. That's the ideal thing. And it's fun.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, that's really the only reason to do it, is that it's fun and you love it and you just want to play it.
Yeah. And there's always, covers are always going to be part of our live set. We're always going to have one or two cutty, obscure cover, something that we love always in the set, just for energy. It's the same thing. It's just absolutely fun and something that you want to introduce people to. The whole reason Orgone exists in the first place is because at the time in the late 90s, and when we were kind of just teenagers, just when we were so kind of dug in deep and enthralled with this, soul music and funk music and blues, and R&B, it was just wasn't really around all that much, and it was kind of a mission that it's like, oh, you want to kind of throw a spotlight on all this great music that people don't necessarily know about or didn't at the time. This was pre widespread internet, before streaming or before Napster or before MP3s, really. So it was something we wanted to champion and sort of expose people to if they weren't, as far as in the very earliest days of just playing gigs and trying to take the funk to the people.
Oh yeah, I mean, you gotta have people for that as a party atmosphere. It's so crazy as I hear you talk about the late 90s. It sounds like so long ago, remembering the internet becoming a thing and personal computers being into every house. And wow, it just feels like I remember Napster, and I remember the backlash of music companies fighting against digital and things like that. But it's just crazy how now what you used to have to dive for 45s and LPs and Amoeba or whatever. And now Spotify, you can just click of a button and find a song.
It's almost to where it's overwhelming that you have to forge your relationship with Spotify and it'll start delivering for you, but it's taken me a while just to even kind of really get to that place, because it tends to be, feels like you're sort of out in the wild alone, where You know, a lot of things we came up with is just there were some great, a lot of great CD compilations that started and reissues that started coming out in the '90s of great soul music and JB's and you know, the just things that had been out of print up until around that time.
I remember Star Power. That was one of my favorites.
Oh, that was great. Yeah, that box set. That was awesome. That was a crucial for sure.
And the love, that was the love power piece. Live in France.
Oh man, live at the Apollo, at the Olympia. Yeah. Sure. That was, oh man, and that the band is on fire. I mean, that's with Bootsy on bass and Catfish, and I mean that was, yeah, that I wore that CD out. I mean, gosh, you know. And before that, I remember one of the first things that really was the James Brown Funky People compilations. I don't know.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm, the one with Bobby Bird and
it was all the Bobby Bird and
yeah.
One of those had the Lynn Collins version of Do Your Thing, and just it was all the James Brown produced artists, all the everyone on People Records.
Yeah, which, I remember.
James Brown's subsidiary. So yeah, you know, it was really it's always just been like, man, you know, you want more exposure to this music that you love so much. You know, it means a little bit different now because it's all. Everything is well exposed, so it's more about championing the aspects of it that you believe, you know, how it speaks to us.
Definitely. You really created not only with Orgone like a vehicle for the music, but with Killian Sound in your studio. I mean, so many great artists have recorded there. I've recorded there, obviously, Mestizo B, Orgone stuff, which I had been introduced through Ubiquity to the Killian Floor album. Not even making the connection that the studio was that, and you were a part of that, too. That was kind of like all these things kind of clicking for me. But I think Monophonic, Jungle Fire, all of them have kind of at some point crossed paths with you. And then Neil Francis' album that you just did was amazing for Coal Mine. But, I mean, how many people have kind of gone through there? And do you have any favorites of albums that you've worked on and recorded and done?
Geez, it's been 10 years of a lot of wonderful artists and musicians coming through. It's hard to have any favorites because they're all you love all of them so much. You spend time with it, you know, everything you spend them, you get real intimate with it, and you just, you know, you have an affinity for everyone I've worked with and everything that's come out of the studio. So I really feel like it's a special place. You know, you've been there, so you know it's janky and it's funky and it's DIY. But it has a soul and it's got a vibe. And I think everyone who's worked there recognizes that. And that's been great. You know, and the sound, it's got a sound. So I mean, you know, it's been a lot of special things. We worked with a producer by the name of Jack Splash around 2000, maybe it was around 2000. Oh, that was early 2000s. We actually were part of his touring band. He had a project called Plant Life and, we were his touring band, and, he's become a really renowned producer, and he's produced a lot of great artists in the pop and R&B world. Working with him was really special, and a lot of those tracks that we did with him ended up with Orgone as a rhythm section. You know, ended up on some pop records, some Grammy winning stuff. That was you know, that's definitely a feather in the cap in terms of some kind of validation. I love everyone that we've worked with. I'm very blessed that people have, like yourself, have gravitated to want to come to the studio, to Killian Sound, to you know, to just experience recording there and you know, have that energy. There's some kind of energy in the dust there. So to answer your question, I can't have any favorites.
Well, yeah, you don't want to not pick one. I understand how that goes. For sure. But I mean, you have validation through that. You have validation, obviously, through touring as well. I see that you guys had opened back in 2010 for Sharon Jones and Dab Kings when they were on tour. Rest in peace, Sharon Jones. And then also playing Bonnaroo. Bonnaroo, I did not know was named after Dr. John. I only found that out a couple years ago.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a little late to the game on something. And then New Orleans Jazz Heritage Fest and stuff. So I know that touring is a lot of, you know, what Orgone does. And obviously with the pandemic and what's going on now, everyone is affected with touring. So how are you guys affected? And are you going to be maybe doing anything difference because of that, as far as how you're pushing out, promoting new music, and let's obviously talk about your new singles as well.
Yeah, that's a good question. Like all of working bands, we're kind of as far as touring and playing shows, we're all sort of just in still water until things look better and things start becoming safer, which who's to say when that'll be a reality.
So do you think you guys will be putting out more digital content or for people to hear during that time?
Well, yeah, as far as music, I think, as far as we have some live in the studio performances we filmed right at the beginning of the, right before the lockdown that are getting edited still. We'll see when, I think we're going to hold off on that for a minute. You know, right now we're not really keen on self-promotion right now.
A lot of bands are like that too. But I did want to talk about the previous single before the lockdown. I saw that The Vice Star came out on Valentine's Day. And so kind of want to talk about that. It sounded like it was kind of going back to a more throwback sound than the later disco stuff of the album before.
It's definitely, and as far as the instrumental, you know, it's been fun working with that on that one. It's kind of, let's get back more into or something that speaks more to our love of soundtrack, kind of the Isaac Hayes soundtrack stuff and, you know, library music and just the mid-70s, just a little grittier, harder-hitting stuff. And that's the first song off our next album, which is called Connection, which I've got, basically we've got an album cycle that we're looking to release over the next year or so, some records and songs that I've been working on. The band's been working on, and I've been working on just kind of finishing production and mixing and really just sort of massaging into life and polishing. It's interesting because we were gearing up to sort of have this, to get into this album cycle of, kind of a set period of time that we're going to just kind of start hammering out some releases. So that song, that's the first song off this next album, and the album should be coming probably around late summer, and it'll be the first of a four song album cycle that's going to kind of each one is a little bit thematically linked, and all we're going with a lot of collaborations, a lot of guest singers and guest performers. I don't know about, you know, promotion or anything like that so much, but we definitely, while we're not touring for the rest of the year, definitely putting a lot of focus into getting music out, just getting music with people, you know. We've never stopped making music, and we're trying to catch up with that fact of releasing more music more often. And the way consumption is now, it's been a long time coming that we've been wanting to get some of this material out and really just kind of I've put it out in a way that makes sense. And each of these albums is going to be like a kind of a very thematic piece. Like they're each going to have an identity and a sound. And then as soon as we can get back in the room together, we're all a little bit spread out. So it's a little bit of an endeavor for the band to get together in the same room. It's not the time now anyways to be able to do that.
Do you find finishing these albums can be a daunting task since you're kind of in the lion's share of production and recording and other stuff? Is it hard for you to stick a fork in it and say, okay, it's done?
It definitely is. Luckily I've got, you know, the partners in the band and the kind of the primary guys in the Oregon to sort of help. There's a good team of us to help keep it going forward and from getting stuck, because I can definitely get bogged down. Exactly. The fork in it. I've got a couple of great tracks that you wrote the lyrics and melody to that I absolutely love. So it's one of those things I can't wait to get it out, you know. So it's just, but getting it right and getting it presentable and getting it to that state of where primarily for Oregon fans, and from there hopefully it can spread to new ears, and we're lucky to have that avenue of putting music out.
Yeah, no, I mean, we're definitely at least in an age where we can do that from the comfort of our homes and people can listen to their homes. So we have that. So for my last question for you, and I asked this of a lot of the guests on there, what would you say your legacy is, or what do you want to be most remembered for, Sergio or Ogon? I don't know where one starts and one ends, so either one or both.
For Sergio, I was like, hey, that guy was all right. And then
mission accomplished.
I hope. And then for Ogon, that this was a music making machine, and they never stopped. You know, and it was just a. Wow, that's a tough question on that end.
I like that, though. I think if I had Nebuchadnezzar said they never stopped, that would be like very powerful for me.
Well, let's leave it at that. They were the music making machines, never stopped. They had some funky cuts.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I think, you know, no one is thinking
about...
Hopefully
they weren't assholes.
No, definitely not. I don't think... Well, I guess you could make that music and not, but I think it's almost spiritual in a way, and the organic process of how you're doing it and the energy. And I pick up on that vibe that's in the bones of the studio and in the bones of the players. And so I think it's hard to... I think the assholes kind of weed themselves out or get weeded out.
Well, thanks, man. Thank you. And thanks for saying that. That's well put. And it's an honor to kind of hear that. Thank you.
Of course. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to meet with us today. I'll definitely circle back to you when it's said and done and out so you can hear it. And I can't wait to hear the new album, not only tracks that, you know, I worked on with you guys, but just all of them. I mean, I just think at this time, the more music that I can hear and I have the time to listen to albums, you know, cover to cover, I like that experience. And someone explained it to me really well, too. I talked to some mastering engineers the last couple of weeks, and they said the reason why vinyl works so well is because it's an experience, and that's what you're really selling through all the mediums. No one goes to listen to Spotify and sit down with their beer to look at it, but you would do that while looking at a vinyl record.
Absolutely. That's how I grew up with a record collection and you know, collecting records. Yeah, that's one thing I wish, as a closing thought, that would be great if Spotify could do is sort of have the virtual credits and everything that were, you know, if you like an album, that you could kind of like, as you're listening to it, you can be, you know, looking at the album credits and liner notes, and just the same way you sit there and kind of keep turning over a record and see the artwork in full screen and somehow integrate that, because I definitely miss that. It's not as fun, or like that was really well put. It's an experience. It's missing that experience of kind of diving into it visually while you're listening, and kind of with your whole being sort of just taking it in. Absolutely, I think that's really well put. So
yeah, I hope they can do that. Maybe some type of VR experience. I can put on goggles and see the band playing and the record spinning and all. I want it all.
Might go that way.
Well, whoever figures that out is going to make some money for sure. Awesome. Well, otherwise, I think they're going to either start having bands playing in a drive-in movie situation or in Spinal Tap pods. So take your pick. All right, Sergio, it was good talking to you, man. We'll have to catch up again soon.
Thank you, Cliff.
All right, take care.
Take care, bud.
Bye.
Thanks again for listening to Deeper Grooves, Musicians on Music, hosted by Cliff Beach and sponsored by California Soul Music Record Label. I would like to thank our special guest today, Mr. Sergio Rios, coming on air live to talk about his group Ogon and their upcoming releases. I can't wait to listen to their new stuff, and I'm sure you can't either. I would like to also thank Tim Hall, our engineer, for mixing and mastering this at 1192 Studios in Westlake Village, California. If you like what you hear and you want to hear more, you can check us out online at www.californiasoulmusic.com/deepergrooves. Until then, keep it funky. Take care.